maybe move into some of the discussion on the bills before we actually call to order as members continue to come in. With that, Michelle, could you lead us in that discussion?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I just wanted to point out in your packets you have a copy of the latest base level spreadsheet for the February 2016 forecast. These appropriation numbers are the base level that we will be working with for the 2016 legislative session as it involves tax refunds, aids, and credits. And I'll just point out to you, you've got four pages here, and I've grouped this. This should look very familiar. I've grouped this according to accounts, refunds, local aids, tax credits, and so forth. And I'll just bring your attention to the last page, the bottom line number on line 105, total appropriations from the February forecast for fiscal 16 and 17 is $3.35 billion dollars in aids and credits, and for 18-19 we have $3.453 billion. And I will point out that this is not much change since the November forecast. There's not much change. You can follow the lines along the way, but those are the base level numbers. The next spreadsheet I will have for you is the updated governor's recommendations. I didn't have enough time to present that to you, so that will be at next week's meeting. I don't anticipate that it will take long to go over that either. But that's your base level appropriations, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Schill. Members, any questions for Ms. Schill before maybe you want to take this back and digest it a little bit? Any questions, members? Otherwise, we will get started here with the meeting. Thank you, Ms. Schill. With that, members, we do have quorum, and the chair does call the meeting to order. This is a meeting of the House Property Tax and Local Government Finance Division. We will begin with review and approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from the March 3rd, 2015 meeting?
Mr. Chair, I'll move approval.
Representative Erickson moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of adopting those minutes from the last meeting, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The minutes are adopted. And with that, Representative Erickson, Representative Erickson, if you want to get your testifiers, and then we'll do some introductions here as you are assembling. Members, welcome to this, the first meeting of this session, actually the first official meeting. We had an unofficial one a while ago. With that, we do have some new staff members, and I'd like to introduce to you Steve Bartle, who is our new committee legislative assistant. Steve, do you want to say a few words to wow the members? I caught him off guard. I didn't call him that.
I'm just happy to be here.
Okay. That was four or five. So yeah, he met the threshold of a few. With that, thank you, Steve. And Sean Rival, are you here? He's our Pages member, Sean, and J.R. Stevenson. Thank you both. Look forward to working with you this session. And thank you. With that, Representative Erickson, if you would like to introduce House File 2529 and then your guests as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'd like to move House File 2529 to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dabney.
Representative Erickson, Chair Erickson, no disrespect intended, but this does raise the question. The motion is to lay over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Are you anticipating a second tax bill beyond the one that is currently in conference?
Thank you, Representative Dabney. At this point, not anticipating anything particularly, and actually, Representative Erickson, for now, I think we'll just lay the bill over. And we can decide on possible inclusion if indeed there is a discussion. But Representative Dabney, I have not heard that particular discussion.
Mr. Chair, it it raises a conundrum independent of Representative Erickson's bill and independent of the quality of our value of any of the bills to be heard in the committee this year. We have a tax bill in conference. The House and Senate joint rules are very clear. Nothing can come back from a conference committee that was not in one of the two bills that went to that conference committee. So, you know, our poster child for this conversation right now, this bill can't go anywhere unless there's a second tax bill that moves through the process, passes off, you know, passes out of the tax committee, passes off the House floor, goes to a second conference committee. I'm just trying to understand the process here for all the bills in the division.
And Representative Dabney, we all are trying to understand the process. And as we hear more and more of those discussions come forward, we will, there may be another tax bill, there may not be. We'll have to have that discussion when it gets here. But for now, I think most of the focus is on the conference committee report and developing that. And so I know there we had a meeting of the conferees yesterday with staff to look at the numbers and kind of bring those up to speed. And so that work is going on, and we can anticipate much or most of the focus, or maybe all the focus, I don't know, being on that. But for now, I think we want to conduct the work of the committee. Mm-hmm. In the event that there is opportunity to move more things forward, we certainly will. But for now, we're going to lay Representative Erickson's bill over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Erickson.
It could always be a possible inclusion in a possible omnibus bill.
Oh, thank you for correcting us, Representative Erickson. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson does move to lay over House File
2529.
And we will proceed. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This House file is patterned after a provision that Representative Marquardt brought forth in earlier years for Monoman County when land that was in fee was transferred into trust. This now would be an example of that happening in Mille Lacs County. In Mille Lacs County, we have a kind of a continuous movement from fee to trust as the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwa applies to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Department of Interior for that transfer. And so this would be a reimbursement to a taxing jurisdiction, that being Mille Lacs County, and then also covering the taxes lost to school districts and cities located in the area of the trust, the fee to trust. Mr. Chair, I have the bill before you, and it lays out very specifically the timeline that would occur. But as we continue to discuss this, what's happening across the state, Morrison County has just received notice that the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwa is moving 3,200 acres from fee to trust. So I would suspect that in the future you'll have more of these, and that as this occurs across the state, because I know Scott County is also interested, and there may be other counties as well, we need to consider this policy of what does happen when the federal government does not have a policy for reimbursing taxing jurisdictions, when valuable taxable land is lost to trust. In a county like Mille Lacs, even though you will see the fiscal note is not a great deal of money like it is for Monoman County, which receives over $1 million each year to cover the loss of property value. This is something that's going to be ongoing, and I hope as we have this policy discussion, we will consider what is the best policy for these situations, and will it be ongoing, and will it be permanent as it is for Monoman County, Monoman School District, and the City of Monoman. So with that said, Mr. Chair, I have two testifiers, our County Administrator, Pat Ullman, and County Commissioner Dave Oslin, who represents the district that surrounds Lake Mille Lacs. So, Mr. Chair, I guess I'd like them to give you the facts behind this appeal that I'm making to you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson, and welcome Mr. Ullman and Mr. Oslin. Mr. Ullman, could you introduce yourself for the record and then introduce your discussion?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Pat Ullman. I'm the County Administrator for Mille Lacs County. Did that suffice, sir? Did I answer everything you needed? Okay, good. Thank you, sir. But I'm the Mille Lacs County Administrator. I've been the County Administrator for approximately 6 months now, and I helped prepare the 2016 budget for Mille Lacs County. And one of the things I learned very quickly is really how tax-averse our county is. We are made up of small retail owners, farmers, fixed-income individuals, many seniors, that raising taxes is a significant issue for them. In our last Truth and Taxation hearing, the room was filled, as are in many government units, with the concerns we have with budgets and the levying of taxes. We did a very small levy increase for 2016, about 2.2%, well below many of the counties within our region. And the driving force was the fact that our taxpayers really are affected significantly. And just to kind of give you, before I go into detail on some of this information, for us at Mille Lacs County, $130,000 is about a 1% levy increase. And so when we increase our levy, and our prospective levy for 2016 was 8.5% because of road issues, road maintenance issues, and a very large public safety department we have with our sheriff's office that has to address many of the issues that occur in our county from a law enforcement perspective. At the same time, that really is the driving force to keep our taxes low. One of the big issues that have come before us is the fact that this is an ongoing issue at Mille Lacs County. We right now, Mille Lacs County is our largest, excuse me, the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe is one of our largest landowners and one of our largest taxpayers. Currently, there's about $177 million right now that currently has been put into trust, a value that has been put into trust. So a significant amount of tax revenue that gets spread to these small business owners, to the farmers, and the people on the fixed income. What the bill provides is for at least 49 parcels to be reimbursed, and it's really a small amount of money in the great scheme of things. It's about $13,000, as I indicated. That's about a 10% levy increase for us. So from our county perspective, it is significant. And I guess what I would like to do is then defer to Dave Oslin, our county commissioner, that represents that area of Mille Lacs County in question. Sir.
Thank you, Mr. Ullman. Mr. Oslin, welcome. Please introduce yourself and proceed, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dave Oslin. I'm the Mille Lacs County Commissioner, 5th District. I serve the whole north end of Mille Lacs County. I cover four townships that border Mille Lacs Lake and three cities, Isle, Waukon, and Onamia. The area where the vast majority of fee to trust land goes, land gets put into trust, is in my district. Thank you for hearing us today. As our administrator painted you a picture of our taxing jurisdiction here and our concerns moving forward, especially being our local tribe, the Mille Lacs Band, is the largest taxpayer in our county. They do hold a large number of land, and they do have a history of placing some of those parcels into trust. And not only do we lose the taxing, but of course we lose the regulation when that happens. Also, there's some things within my district. Most of you have heard about the slowdown, I guess I'll call it, of the walleye fishery on Mille Lacs Lake. And that has really affected my district. It affected us to the fact of assessments by our local assessor. And in my district alone, within 1 year there, we lost over $26 million in value, and that was mainly lakeshore property. And a lot of that was largely due to the demise of the walleye fishery. So that $26 million has to be picked up by the rest of the county. My district, I'm one-fifth of the county, but we contribute over one-third of the tax base for Mille Lacs County. So it's real significant, and it does play into the other areas of concern with our local businesses, and we're heavy on tourism up there. But when you put all this together and you see the fact that we are a very high tax county, we have a high utilization of public services, And we only have so much square footage, and that seems to be eroding on a quite regular basis. It does paint a little bit of a bleak picture for us. Our taxing capacity is not that great to begin with, and it rarely gains. From year to year, we kind of stay the same. When it comes to the fee to trust, we as a county, of course, have objected to those applications, and we've appealed them. And regardless, the tribe has been successful in placing it into trust for their criteria, their reasons. But again, not only do we lose the taxation, we also lose the regulation. And it's a real concern of ours from the past, with it 49 parcels, and that was just during the window of this bill. It does show that there's a history there, and we think it's going to continue. So we'd really like to stress that to you folks today.
Thank you, Mr. Oslin. Questions, members? I've got one real quick. Mr. Oslin, just kind of don't go in the weeds too far on it, but what threshold does the tribe have to put forward in order to accomplish these fee to trust actions with the federal government? If you would, quickly.
Don't quote me on this, but there's three criteria, and I'm not for sure what they are, but one is the health and welfare of the tribe itself, and economic security, and I don't know the third one, but there's three criteria that they need to be able to apply for it. And they've been successful. Our objections at a county level, there's a number of reasons we object to. One is oftentimes the tribe will place the land, they will use the criteria that the land is on reservation, and Mille Lacs County does not believe there's a reservation there, neither does the state of Minnesota. And so we object on that grounds. We also object on the grounds that our particular tribe was not recognized in 1934, and federally you have to be recognized in order to place land into trust. So we do object on a number of valid points, but again, the agency, the Department of Interior through the Bureau of Indian Affairs, does grant those applications. I honestly don't know of one that they did not grant.
Thank you. Members, other questions for Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for staff. The Disparity Reduction Aid School, where is that accounted for in our committee structure?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney, we've got the February forecast. We have a line appropriation. So are you asking where is that associated with this bill's impact?
Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, Ms. Schill, is that in this committee's jurisdiction or is that in K-12? I see school and I wonder where it's tracked.
Ms. Schill.
Disparity Reduction Aid is a line, and I'm looking quickly through my spreadsheet.
28
here,
or 29, Ms. Schill.
Yeah, 28, 29. That's where we have it, and you can see how it's mm-hmm. broken between mm-hmm. school and non-school. With respect to the $70,000 impact starting in fiscal 18 for this bill. You just received the fiscal, revenue estimate, mm-hmm. and I apologize for its tardiness. But if you see in the bill that the county would be responsible for sharing that reimbursement that's being proposed to all the entities, which would include the school. And in fact, I have a pay 15 estimate of what those what the lost revenue would be, and ISD 480 is it? Onamia? Got it. Is about that revenue loss is about $2,000 of the $14,000 or so per year.
All right. Thank you. That's helpful.
Thank you. Other questions, members? Representative Erickson, any last comments from the author?
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for hearing this bill as both policy and fiscal impact. The United States government does not consider the loss to our state when they move land from fee to trust. And that's a sad statement to make, that they allow these transfers and never consider the impact it has on our states. And this is happening across the nation, but, you know, for us, it's right here in Minnesota. So, you know, I've had discussions with my congressman and with the Senate representation, and it really falls on deaf ears. And I've been to Washington, I've been to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, I've been to the Department of Interior. I spent much of the last decade making those trips, pleading the case, especially when Mille Lacs County was appealing, trying to lay out the argument about the effect that it has on our taxpayers. And they seem to have no cognizant ability to realize what that does to us in our state of Minnesota and in our counties. So I will continue to work on this issue and hope that we can have future discussions about these kinds of policy, and considering that we've set a precedent for Minoman through Representative Marquardt's legislation, I think we do have to have a serious discussion about what's happening in our state and engage our federal congressional delegation and get them to also address this with the Bureau of Indian Affairs and come to some kind of decision as this continues into the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. I did not ask if there's anyone else who would like to testify on this bill. I had assumed we had the Mille Lacs delegation was here. So Representative Erickson and Mr. Ullman and Mr. Oslin, thank you. This helps, I think, shine the light on this issue, and as Representative Erickson pointed out very clearly, I mean, we've got Minoman where we are providing this offset for them, and then there's two or three or more other counties that have a similar situation, so we really need to have that policy discussion at some point here, and appreciate you sharing a real-world look at what is going on here, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
With that, the chair does lay over House File 2529. Next on the agenda, Representatives Marquardt and Lean, do you want to each bring all of your bills up, and we'll have kind of a maybe more informal approach to this collection of bills that addresses kind of a similar discussion, an ongoing one that we've been having, and I appreciate you bringing some new ideas in these areas forward. Representative Marquardt, I'll let you introduce.
Very good, and thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. And the issue we're going to talk about today is not anything new to the committee. Representative Druskowski, you put emphasis on agricultural property tax relief, and just what Representative Lean and I have before you is expansion of a current existing program for agricultural property tax relief, but also some new ideas and some new approaches. And it really came out not only from the increase in ag property taxes, especially in the last 4 and 5 years, but it was also a discussion that we had back in Clay County with probably 30 or 40 farmers who came together a couple times to meet and developing plans and so forth. So and we do have some testifiers. I think, Mr. Chair, would you like to kind of talk about things and have them come down at that point, or what?
Yeah, let's do that. Representative Marquardt and Representative Lean, if you want to kind of outline just kind of what your ideas are in your bills here, and then we'll just kind of move the bills to layover at the end, each of them, and then like you and I discussed, make it kind of more informal. But yeah, if you would kind of. Do a rough description of those ideas, and then we can bring those folks forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so there is an amendment I'm going to need on my bill to move it from 2016 to 2017, but we'll hold off on that. So again, the impetus for these bills is the huge increase in property taxes on ag land, and we know agriculture is about 20% of the state's economy. It's very, very significant. And just put it in perspective, in the last 10 years from 06 to taxes payable in 2016, on homeowners, property taxes have gone up about 28%. On commercial industrial, it's about 49%. And on agricultural land, it's 120%, where it's gone from back in 06, property taxes statewide on ag land was about $355 million. In 2016, that's going to be about $780 million. And locally, and I've got a number of actually tax statements from area farmers, back in 2010, the amount of property taxes per acre was about, this is in Clay County, was about $20 per acre. And now what we see, and this is 2015, I don't have any for 2016, but from 2015, it's roughly about $40 to $55 per acre. And when you look at that, that's getting up over 10% of gross income. I mean, it's really the property taxes as a percent of gross income, part of expenses, is really getting very, very high. And why is this happening? It's kind of a perfect storm. Something that you saw were these huge increases in market value in the last 5 and 6 years. And with that, the correlating property tax increases in Clay County, according to the Clay County assessor, back in 2004, ag land comprised 19% of the total tax base in the county in 2004, 19%. And in 2014, that rose to 38%. So it doubled. While residential property tax market value as a percent of the total land base went from 60% down to 43%. So you see this huge shift in Clay County, which I would think is not too different from many of the counties of members around the table here. So that's kind of, and then you have, at the same time, with this perfect storm, you have commodity prices really dropping. And then kind of the third thing that this committee addressed last year is in the tax bill is you also then have schools going to the voters for building bonds. Just as all day, every day, kindergarten has created space crunch needs, there's a slight uptick of student enrollment and so forth. So it's kind of, you know, the rising market values, the lower commodity prices, and a lot of schools going to referendums have kind of created this perfect storm out there. So what does my bill do, 2192? It's not new, but it greatly enhances the current agricultural market value credit. And so very quickly, right now on the agricultural market value credit, on the first $115,000 of value, the credit is 0.3%. So that gets you to $345 of credit. Now, up to a couple years ago, that then used to drop down till your credit would be at 230 maximum at about $345,000. So that got eliminated, and so what it is now is from that 345 then, it goes 0.1% up to a value of about $260,000 market value to a max credit of $490. So that's right now, the maximum credit is $490. So what 2192 does, it then takes that 0.1, instead of stopping at 260,000, it goes to that first tier on the homestead, which that value in 2017 is just going to be slightly over $2 million. So now that would be about $2,280 of credit. And it doesn't stop there, it keeps going. And then, though, instead of at 0.1, it then above that tier goes at 0.05 up till whatever. So, and that's for homestead. And then for non-homestead, which has not had a credit in the past, at all values, it's at 0.05. So let me just give you a quick example of what that kind of means. I calculated, and Mr. Hines can maybe correct me. But assuming an acre of land at $5,000 per acre, which is kind of where a lot of it's at the 0.3 up to that first 115,000, which is only about 23 or 24 acres, that'd be about a credit of about $15 an acre is about what that would be worth. At the 0.1, so the rest of that at the $5,000 per acre, it'd be about $5 per acre credit. And at the 0.05, it'd be about $2.50 credit. So just to give you an idea, and that's at a $5,000 per acre or per acre value. So the kind of the benefits of this is it's just enhancing existing law. It is tied to market value, and it is scalable. So, I mean, you could back it off or, you know, do whatever to try to make that work. So, that's kind of the what that plan does. There's one more point I wanted to make on that is, I think that's probably explains the bill. So.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. We had, and as you pointed out, we've got a bill that's in the Tax Conference Committee that does, I mean, certainly a different approach, focuses on the ag construction levy. But this is yet another idea to take general fund money to help relieve some of the problem. The other part that we don't focus maybe quite as much on is some of the causes, and I had a series of meetings that I had around the state in the last month or so, and that's one of the things that people brought up is, you know, the things that the legislature does to the local community. And one of those, and Representative Marquardt, you pointed out, last biennium we had some mandates that we placed upon these school districts, and we came forward with legislation that required all-day, everyday kindergarten, and their costs are not covered, so the schools are raising property taxes to compensate some of that. We took away the voters' ability to say no on some of these school referendums, and the school area has been growing quite a bit, and so that coupled with some of the things, Representative Marquardt, that you pointed out, some of the market realities and the shifts that are going on with ag land is really a perfect storm is right on. Thank you for bringing this bill. And Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, I remembered the one thing I forgot, and that was the price, how much this would cost.
Oh, thank you.
Members might be interested in. Currently, I think the program is about $40 million a year. And this would cost about $78 to $79 million. So it's a significant enhancement of the program. So that's what I had forgot was
sort
the price
about,
tag.
Sort of about doubles the
revenue. Yeah, well, slightly important here in the Finance Committee. Well,
triples it. So, okay. Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Marquardt, did you have historic information on what rental rates, you know, for tillable acreage, how they've changed with the tax?
Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, I do not have that historic, but I was just talking with some farmers this last weekend, and the rent is probably $150 to $200 an acre currently, roughly in that category. So I don't know for sure what it was, you know, back 5 years ago for sure, but I'm sure it was lower than that.
Representative Quam.
Thank you. I understand what you're trying to do here in this bill, and I understand the demand from the farmers because they can't afford if they've got the high taxes that they go up because somebody sells off a wooded area for housing development. You know, the problem is the assessed value does not track the economic or production value of the land, and that's the crux of the matter. And at some point I hope we can see bills that will address the fundamental issue. We're also seeing that in certain cities where there's speculation and a property sells for much more than the other properties might sell because it will bump up the property tax assessed value for all the businesses in the area, and I don't think it reflects reality. And businesses, there's some flexibility, but you can't take your farm and move it over you can't open it up in any open space because, you know, tillable is different than just regular ag. We've got to look at the fundamental issue. Unless we want all the farmers to sell their land and see that value, and they won't be farmers anymore, or realize that ag land has to be treated as production ag land as opposed to just something we can, we need more money, or let's bump up the assessed value. So I like your intent. I'm just sad that we don't have fundamental change, and it might not be possible for this session.
Well, I think Representative Quam and Representative Lean's got some bills that kind of go in that direction. We've heard about the Iowa model and some other states that are going on, but so I'm glad that Representative Lean's bringing that discussion here today, and I think that'll be valuable. And we've heard that from farmers. It doesn't focus on the productivity or the economic viability, but rather focus strictly on the valuation. But Representative Marquardt, do you have a response to Representative Quam, or should we proceed?
Well, I think that would be a great time to lead into what Representative Lean had, because he's going to look at a study on a production value. And so, Mr. Chair, members, my approach is an existing one, and Representative Lean actually looks at some newer approaches.
Representative Hertaus has got a question, then we can maybe proceed. Representative Hertaus.
Well, I guess I'm a little concerned about how this is adapted for the long term, because as you pointed out, there were market phenomenons, and at a time that the housing market was collapsing and foreclosure became the market, and federal policies made credit tight, which made it even more difficult for buyers to qualify and obtain mortgage money, which would support housing prices. At that same time, the bright star in our economy during this crisis was agriculture, and commodity prices were going up, and obviously the revenue on those acres was going up, and the demand for ag land was going up, so that was driving the inverse of what was going on with housing. Housing was collapsing, so all the value in town was collapsing, and all of the ag land was going up in value, and that obviously caused a shift in how the levy is applied and who's paying for it. And so I think that's the important thing to understand about what's going on. Now the market is correcting itself again. Employment is getting better, credit's getting better, access to funds is getting better, housing prices are starting to recover, and unfortunately for ag, commodity prices are plummeting. So the demand for ag land is shifting the other way. So it's starting to move back in balance. But for those members who don't work the ground, I mean, typically farmers look at their land as it's only worth what it can produce. And that really is divided into two categories, dry land or irrigated land. And for the typical dry acre, statewide average on corn might be around 150 bushel acre. And when it was $7 and $8 a bushel, you had $1,200 of gross income, as you had pointed out about a relationship of the tax burden to income. $50, $40 or $50 an acre was less of a burden with that higher revenue. But now the market reality is gross revenue is about $525 at $350 corn. And so $40 or $50 is now 10% of that. So it puts a real pinch on it. And a farmer really can't make money even at $350 corn if the inputs start going above $400 an acre. And frankly, whenever commodity prices go up, everyone else has their hand out too, including government. But fertilizer prices always soar when the price goes up. So does the price of seed. Fuel was high. Diesel was $4 a gallon. We have a member here that has a combine that costs $2,000 just to fill up the combine at $4 diesel. So, I mean, it is a hardship. But I guess my concern would be is, as the market comes back to normal, you know, how we make sure that this doesn't then shift the burden back onto the houses in town. So,
thank you, Representative Hertaus. And I've been out to your place, Representative Hertaus. You've got some hardware on your land out there, too.
A little bit.
Not anything like Representative Anderson has, but Representative Marquardt, would you like to move your amendment? Should we put that on right away?
Mr. Chair, that would be great.
If you want to move the bill first.
I will move House File 2192 for to be laid on the table.
Okay, Representative Marquardt moves House File 2192 to be laid over. Representative Marquardt?
Then I would move the A2 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Motion has been made by Representative Marquardt to move the A1.
The A1 amendment.
The A1 amendment.
Thank you.
Any discussion on the amendment, which simply moves the dates? Okay, seeing none, all in favor of adopting the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The A1 amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
Let's, at this point, we will lay House File 2192 as amended over to lay it over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Representative Lean.
Yeah. All rest.
Thank you for bringing your bills.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And at this point, I will move the House File 2200 to be laid over. And I do have an amendment, the A1 amendment. I will move that also right away. And that basically just changes the date on line 1.2 from 2016 to 2017 as I drafted it last year and hearing it this year. So just to get it up to date and everything.
Okay, Representative Lee moves the House File 2200 and then to be laid over, and then moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion on the A1 amendment to House File 2200? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Lean, please describe your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could get a page, I do have printouts. I don't know if they were included in your packets or not, but I do have printouts. It looks like descriptions of the bills and as well as the revenue notes. Are they in there? Okay, good. All right, thank you. All right, House File 2200, as Representative Marquardt mentioned, a lot of these ideas came about after we had several meetings with Clay County farmers in the last year talking about this very issue, property taxes being very high relative to low crop prices. And so basically House File 2200 would change the current property tax refund program for homestead ag land to provide relief to ag producers across the state. Currently, only an ag homestead landowner can qualify for the property tax refund based on the value of their house, garage, and immediate 1 acre. Under this bill, that ag homestead land would be considered to include all of the homesteaded land, so all of the land beyond the house, garage, 1 acre. And the effect of it would be, you know, a larger refund for those ag property tax owners. And this would also be for the regular property tax refund as well as the targeted property tax refund. So in those cases where the property taxes go up more than 12% on any given year, this would also apply to that program as well. And I don't know if members have any questions. I mean, that's the gist of the bill, and I think we'll probably hear from some landowners here a little later. I've also asked the Farm Bureau and Farmers Union to speak on these bills as well.
Okay, thank you, Representative Lean. Members, any questions for Representative Lean before we bring people up? Okay, let's anybody who would like to testify or talk about this issue here.
Yep.
And I don't know if I open that, Representative Marquardt, for people to talk about your bill too, but if they'd like to, we certainly can.
Yeah.
Mr. Peterson, do you want to step up to the plate and take a swing? Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Peterson, I messed up. We want to have real people up here first. Okay, so we have Mr. Johnson is here.
So, and Mr. Chair and
Representative Marquardt.
These folks were all part of the discussions we had in Clay County, and it was just really good discussion and good ideas. So we do have Mr. Ray Johnson here and Mr. Mark Harless and Mr. David Craigness from the Clay County area. So.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson and others, for coming. And we do like to have real people on the agenda first here. And so we all know and love Mr. Peterson, but we like to have especially people who travel as far as you folks did. Thanks for coming today and discussing this with us. Mr. Johnson, good to see you again. If you would introduce these other guys again for us, or they can introduce themselves actually when we get going, but if you want to introduce yourself and
thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ray Johnson. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the committee, Representative Lean, Representative Marquardt, for the opportunity to speak today. My wife and I reside in rural reside and farm in rural Glidden in Clay County, Minnesota. We farm 3,400 acres of corn, soybeans, and sugar beets with our oldest son. We own 650 acres and lease the balance. We started in 1981 with 80 acres of ground. With the help of Farmers Home Administration Beginning Farmer Program, we've grown our farm and raised four children. There have been good times and bad times, but the present ag property tax situation has me very nervous. As farm revenue fluctuates up and down, most farm expenses do the same, or at least we have the opportunity to try and manage them. Unfortunately, ag property tax is a fixed cost the farm cannot control and is putting heavy burden on the profitability. Bare farmland on our farm that is not eligible for homestead credit is currently over $51 per acre. The two farm expenses on our farm that increased the most from 2010 through 2014 was ag property taxes and land rent, which is a direct correlation to the increase in property tax as landlords raise the rent to cover their property taxes. On our farm from 2010 through 2014, I've seen my ag property taxes increase 93% and land rents increase 40%. In that same period of time, property tax on our resident garage and 1 acre declined 11%. I've witnessed school building expansion with the majority being funded by ag property, which has ag property taxes escalating beyond levels that are currently difficult for a farm to handle. In comparison to my farm numbers, I checked with my instructor at the Northland Community and Technical College Farm Business Management Program, supported by the state of Minnesota, and they reported the average farm from 2010 through 2014, ag property taxes increased 72% and land rents increased 42%, while the five-year average net farm income only rose 7% in that period of time. Property tax was the main source of state funding through 1929, when a majority of the population lived on ag property and funding was used mainly for education. In today's environment, the population living on ag property is a minority, and property tax is used for funding multiple services that bare farmland does not utilize, such as social services. Times have changed, and in my opinion, ag property has become an unfair tax, and we need to find new ways to spread funding for our county services and education over the whole population and not just a few. Ag property cannot continue to be taxed on the asset value. An increase in land value doesn't mean an increase in farm revenue to cover the increases we are experiencing in our ag property taxes. Help is needed at the state level to alleviate the strain of unfair taxation on ag property. Past bills that have been incorporated, present bills being introduced today, and any future bills to help resolve these issues on ag property tax are much appreciated, and I sincerely would like to thank everyone for their hard work and dedication. Thank you for listening. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Questions for Mr. Johnson? And we have been hearing these, Mr. Johnson, and you're right. I think we will continue to work on this issue, and appreciate the two members up here today bringing these issues forward, and you gentlemen coming forward. And it's a very difficult issue, a bipartisan concern for this issue for rural Minnesota. So thank you for coming. And Mr. Harkness?
Harless.
If you want to introduce yourself and where you're from and proceed.
Sure. Thank you, Chairman Drzalski, Representative Lean, Representative Marquardt, members of the committee. I appreciate a chance to share my concerns with you on the unsustainable path we are on in regards to property taxes and farm profitability. For a little background, my name is Mark Harless. I live and farm near Borup, Minnesota, about 30 miles northeast of Moorhead. Our farm operation is a partnership between myself, my wife, and our son. We have one full-time employee. We have one combine, three tractors, and three trucks. We farm 5,000 acres consisting of corn, soybeans, and black beans. While we are an above average farm size in Clay County, we are by no means a large farm in our area. There are many farms larger than ours, some of them five or six times larger. Our family owns 3,110 acres along with our lender, and we cash rent the other farmland from absentee landlords. On the land we own, we will pay more than $98,000 this year in property taxes. We will pay that whether we make money or not, That means we need to make $98,000 just to pay the property taxes. In addition, we also pay real estate taxes on our houses just like everybody else does, just like you all do. Because we pay cash rent to our landlords for another 1,900 acres, I think it's fair to say that we are also paying their real estate taxes, which at the non-homestead rate, I estimate, will be another $70,000. That means our farm operation, one small family business, will pay more than $168,000 this year in property taxes, primarily on bare farmland. There are years that no one other than our family will step foot on the land. Bare farmland does not require social services, does not produce children, homes, and the people that live in them do. For comparison's sake, we pay more property taxes than the Courtyard by Marriott, more than the Moorhead Center Mall, more than the Target store, more than Wells Fargo Bank. We pay more than the car dealerships in town. We pay more than Titan Machinery and RDO Equipment. We pay more than all but one very large ag co-op elevator, and we're not far behind Walmart and Menards. All of these businesses are there to serve people. They employ hundreds, and they serve thousands of people. On the other hand, we pretty much just grow plants in dirt. Why in the world do we bear so much of the tax burden? How is that fair? And as many of you know, we've talked about it earlier, the farm economy has taken a downturn. Based on today's commodity prices, we cannot project a profit this year. We have tried to negotiate better seed and fertilizer prices with our suppliers and have had limited success. We have also tried to negotiate lower cash rental rates, again with very limited success. Landlords often tell us that they can't take less rent because the taxes are so high, and that's hard to argue with. It is also easier to pay real estate taxes when a farm is making a profit than when you're losing money. There will be no profits this year, and we'll have to pay our real estate taxes by taking it out of our equity, which is money that we've saved over the last few years. And we can do that for a year or two, but it's not sustainable. The property taxes on farmland are too high. They're grossly unfair and unsustainable. And I appreciate any proposals to lower the rates and to explore more equitable ways to distribute the cost of county and school services on all citizens, not just a captive minority of landowners. So thank you again for the opportunity to share my story with you.
Thank you, Mr. Harless. Representative Hertas has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, listening to your testimony touched on something that reminded me of the demographic facts and the demographic realities. When Mr. Johnson mentioned the way things used to be, we need to remind ourselves how this problem is exacerbated, because post-World War II, half the people in this nation lived on the farm. Today, we're less than 2%. And when you're hearing about the size of farms, you know, post-World War II, farms simply weren't this large. And so what's going on right now is forcing the consolidation to even fewer farmers. And I don't think that's good for our country as a whole. So I hope that we can be sensitive to this need.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. Other questions, members of Mr. Harless? Okay. And if you would introduce yourself again, sir.
Hello, my name is David Kragness. I'm a farmer from Felton, Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mr. Lean, and Mr. Marquardt. Contrary to visual appearances, I am a small family farmer, and so I would like to use myself as an example. My local bank, Bell State Bank of Moorhead, says that the minimum size they suggest for a viable single family farmer entity is 1,500 acres. I farm 1,350 acres, so when I use myself as an example, I'm certainly not talking about a big farm. If someone lives just down the road from me in an identical house, but works in town and pays the exact same income and earns the exact same income as me, they will pay the same state and federal income tax. Now, they could have the same net worth as I do, but if theirs is invested in stocks, a vested pension, a 401k, antique cars, or whatever, and since mine is invested in 940 acres of farmland, at the end of the year, I will owe $41,000 more to county and school than they do. I'd like someone to explain to me how this can be fair. My farm, including the rent and ground, totals 1,350 acres. It will have to come up with $58,000 to pay the tax regardless of profitability. My tax bill in 2010 was $23,000 and change. In 2015, it jumped to $41,000 and change. And for the farm, it jumped from $33,900 to $58,000. But I did not bid up land prices. This rise in property was not my fault. Business property taxes are also a factor. So for the sake of this discussion, let's talk about some single-owner businesses in Moorhead and Dilworth. There's a Dairy Queen in Moorhead that's on the best corner in town. And according to the county website, it owes $3,783 in taxes. A liquor store in Dilworth on the main street in a good location owes just over $3,000. And a nice auto shop in Moorhead owes $3,728. None of these owe as much tax as 90 acres of Baird farm dirt. And yet each of them provide opportunities for employment for several people to work. In the Dilworth, Glendon, Felton School District, there are 155 farmers. I counted them. And I included spouses who have full-time jobs and don't consider themselves farmers, guys who consider themselves partially or fully retired. So I was pretty inclusive in my number of 155 farmers. That's 3.6% of the voting residents. In the just defeated school bond, if that would have passed, farm dirt would have been assessed 66% of the bill. 3.6% of the people assessed 66% of the bill. Again, I cannot understand how this could possibly be fair. About two-thirds of the tax bill in the county is, about two-thirds of my tax bill is county. 60% of the county costs are social services, which many of which the state has mandated. So one-third of my local property tax is county social services. As has been stated, Bear Farm Dirt does not produce things that require county social services. And so I appreciate this opportunity to suggest that whether it's done this year or whether it's information for the future, anything that can be done to look at trying to square up this and make it more fair to the family farmers, because Minnesota is becoming known as unfriendly to agriculture, and that's really sad. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Craigness. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. You guys dress up pretty good. Good job. These stories are real, and I also farm, so this affects me as well, so just to make that clear. But I think whatever we do, your last comment about whether we use this to look at the future or do something now, my immediate thought is this problem is here now today. Guys are not getting operating loans for the spring. This is one of the reasons why. So I appreciate the long-term solutions being talked about today, but we need to do something, I think, now, this session, whether it be the school referendum thing we've talked about before, but the need is immediate right now. Something needs to happen to improve these cash flows to help farmers be able to make it stay on the land and do what farmers do in this country is feed all of us and feed the world. So whatever we do, and I appreciate all the efforts to work in this area, the need is immediate. And I was at a conference this winter where ag chairs were discussing the same problem. And we're one of just a few states that uses this market value to appraise land. Senator was there from Indiana, and they use a different method. And their numbers for valuation were far lower. I think currently they were about $2,500 an acre valuation on ag land, and with no changes they're going to go up to about $3,000. But their taxes were about the same as what we pay. So even if we somehow lower the valuation, there's got to be this rebalancing, because the money has to be levied and raised somehow to fund our local governments, and how we tinker with this balance is important. But right now the ag land is out of balance. It's paying far too high a proportion, especially on some of these school capital referendums. So we need to get to work, get something done, I think, in the immediate session today, and then look at possibly the entire way we assess land for the future. But something needs to be done this session. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Mr. Cognes.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Mr. Anderson, I appreciate your thoughts. While this is an immediate and burning crisis, after much discussion with fellow farmers, there's a concern that if we accept something small at this time, that a fundamental restructuring of the system may not take place, because people will say, well, we took care of the farmers in the 2016 session, and we are really concerned about that. I would also personally like to suggest that there is a system in place to tax farmers on the production capacity of their farmland, and that's called income tax. If we make money, you'll collect some of it. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cognos. Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you all for coming here to testify and sharing your stories with us. You actually kind of hit the nail on the head for leading into what I wanted to comment on, which is you mentioned, you know, how can this be fair in reference to if you're invested in property, someone else is invested in other things, and your taxes are much higher. And while I agree with Representative Anderson that we absolutely should do something to address this pressing need right now, I also am concerned that we just keep doing these little piecemeal reforms when the whole system, and not just property taxes, but income taxes, our tax system in general, really does need overhaul. And so, you know, just starting the conversation of what will that look like, what can that look like, and I just thank you, Representative Lean and Marquardt and others, for bringing forward these reforms. My hope is we can continue to work on even more deeper reforms, something like a fair tax, or something else that will just get to the heart of the unfairness in the system. So mostly just a comment, but also wanted to say thank you and hope that we can work together on more reforms.
Thank you, Representative Whalen. And there might be a fair tax bill coming, Representative Whalen. So any other questions, members, for these fine folks from Clay County? Thank you all. And it's Mr. Harless pointed out, I think, that many of these farmers are going to be projecting zero or negative income projections for the year and have these huge property tax debts to deal with. And it's very compelling. Thank you all for sharing. Mr. Peterson, do you want to wait until we review Representative Lean's other bill and then come up? Okay. Representative Lean, any other discussion on this bill, or should we go to your next?
I'm ready to move on, Mr. Chair.
Okay. With that, the chair does lay over House File 2200. Representative Lean, House File 2260.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will also move House File 2260 to be laid over. And I will also right away move the A1 amendment, which again updates some of the dates in the bill, namely when the study is due to the legislature and the fiscal year in which the appropriation would be made.
Thank you, Representative Lean. Representative Lean moves House File 2260 to be laid over and does also move the A1 amendment. Any discussion on the A1 amendment to House File 2260? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Quam, you beat me to the punch on this. House File 2260 would establish a study to look at moving from Minnesota's current market-based valuation assessment system for ag land to an assessment system based on the productivity of the land. The study would be conducted by the Departments of Ag and Revenue in consultation with groups representing ag property owners, assessors, and the University of Minnesota College of Food, Ag, and Natural Resources Sciences. The bill does direct the study to focus on 11 areas related to ag property taxes that have been identified by landowners, representative ag groups, and the U of M College of Food, Ag, and Natural Resources, such as availability and accuracy of data on ag land, potential property tax shifts onto other types and classes of property, valuation volatility under such a production-based system, assessment appeals by landowners, how a production-based system would interact with existing property tax programs, as well as how the system would interact and relate to non-production ag land, such as hang land, pasture land, and ag buildings. To my knowledge, the last time a study was done on this issue was 1991, and hearing from a lot of the ag producers in Clay County that we really should be taking a look at this, I felt it would be valuable if we are going to move to this type of system to get an updated study so that we have a little better idea of what the current situation is, what the current picture is. As we did here, I think Minnesota is about one of 17 states that uses the market value-based assessment system, whereas the other 33 states use some sort of production-based system, whether that's solely production-based on soils,
solely production based on acreage and yields, or some sort of a hybrid system with some production and market value based system. And I can stand for any questions at this time.
Thank you, Representative Lean. Questions for Representative Lean, members? And Representative Lean, I like this bill. I'd be interested in seeing the 1991 study. Can you talk about that again, and Representative Lean?
Yeah, I can. It was the last time a study was done, and I do have some here. I took a look at it last year as I was drafting the bill, and then kind of briefly updated myself with it this year. But some of the challenges that were pointed out in the study and some of the things that we'd have to really take a look at, again, would be the appeals of assessments, interactions with state aids without some sort of basis of equalization, how wetland and conservation easements would be taken into account, as well as shifts, basically, if we're going to reduce the ag property taxes, how we account for that. So that we don't shift too much onto other businesses and residential classes of property.
Thank you, Representative Lean. And I think that shift piece is very important, because, I mean, if you look at, and I think one of the other testifiers talked about that school referendum, 66% would have been paid by the farmers there, and whether you're on a valuation system or a system like you're proposing here, the burden's still the same for the farmers versus the people in town. And really the testimony was very compelling that, you know, farms don't, the dirt doesn't grow people or doesn't grow social service needs. So I hope that this study does that and actually maybe looks at some proposals for it. But thank you for the bill. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for staff or Ms. Schill or Mr. Hines. What part of it, again, is limited to just the house and an acre in terms of, is it just the bond referenda or the operating levies? I think maybe a solution here, too, to consider is maybe production land should be exempt from those, like I think we have the bond referenda, because it really would put farm owners on an equal footing with the people in towns in terms of representation. If you get everybody in town supports the spending on the school, it disproportionately is shifted as a burden to the farm. But could you fill me in on, I don't remember exactly,
Mr. Hines,
with clarity how that works.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Hertas, the current situation is that the farm land is exempt from the operating referendums, but is liable for bond referendum.
Okay. And also, thank you, Mr. Haynes, and also is with the county and township costs, certainly. Is there a discussion about the county tax, too? Or, I mean, that's even a bigger question beyond that, but certainly in the school area, the construction levy is still a liability. Other questions, members? Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is, I guess, maybe a naive or ignorant question from somebody who's new to property taxes and new to the house. But I'm thinking, so in theory, the market value of a property should reflect the production value of the property. I mean, this is right. That's, and so what I want to understand, so I think especially for many folks, we believe in a free market, the idea is that then market value will in fact reflect. So we're going to do a study to figure that out. And so I'm just wanting to figure out what are the imperfections in the market or in the valuation right now that are preventing market values and current valuation from reflecting the production value of the land, if the chair understands the question and the testimony.
Yes, Representative Lean, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pinto, from what I understand, some of the situations that go into this are ag land being held in generations for a long time, and so when we do see sales of land, you know, that increase in the sale price from when, you know, a previous sale took place is going to increase it quite a bit. Also, we heard a little bit about speculation too on ag land and how that can throw off the market value based on, you know, what the farmers are actually getting from income and production.
Mr. Chair, I may just note, this may be an example of a market imperfection, Mr. Chair, of which there may be other examples as well. I started noting that, so thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hertaus.
Just a comment to Representative Pinto, that, you know, the market is now, but taxes are due and payable, you know, 16 due payable 17, so property taxes lag behind the market.
That's other questions or comments? So, Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair, and relative to the discussion on valuation, I happened to be a Scott County Commissioner at the time that the residential real estate lots and so forth were plummeting in the metro area, as well as the farmland, which then had a dual purpose, both for crop production and for development. And my sense was, and I'm not sure, and that might be further discussion to have here, is that the way we value land for assessment purposes, it lags. When you're looking at comparable sales and using that as your indication of value, that doesn't generally catch up quite as quickly as maybe what the land is actually worth. And we had a few cases there where the land value had definitely changed and everybody admitted that the land value had changed. But through research, I came to the conclusion that the assessor was actually following the rules. So I think when we do these studies, it's good to do the study, because I think we have to look at when the land is being valued. Is it being valued fairly for that day, or are we looking back too far? And that's what's happening now, would be my impression here. And unfortunately, when that does happen, the people that are least able to afford it at that point, because their land is now dropping rather than rising, that lag hurts them, because they don't have the income resource to pay it as they did in the good times. So if you make the assumption that what goes up goes down, to build a system that properly and quickly reflects that downturn so that the people that are having to pay the taxes aren't burdened with previous values, that they actually have a valuation that's appropriate for the day and time that they're paying the taxes, would be something to really explore in the study as well.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. I concur. I think, and we also have to look at, again, that in Representative Lean, as you develop this bill and idea, if we can look at that interaction again between the town, the city people, and the farm folks, I think that's so important. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Again, to get back to Representative Pinto's comment about what causes some of these increases in value, another thing we haven't mentioned yet is interest rates. We've been through a period of really, really low interest rates. People with money to invest can't get much of a return with their money in the bank, CDs, for example. So that was a driving factor. With interest rates being so low, it was viewed that farmland was a good investment. And that, in many cases, also drove up the price of land. And I agree about the lag time being difficult right now, as we're on the downside of income especially, but we haven't yet seen that decrease in land values coming in. I would also mention, just talking about, this is a very complicated subject, and when we first heard your bill last year about, again, the school situation, some of these districts out in western Minnesota, their net tax capacity is over 90% ag land. Yeah. So it's the by far the largest part of their tax base. So when we start messing with how we look at that mix of who pays what tax, we have to look at it very carefully, and is a situation that we have to take into mind when we do these things. But I applaud your efforts to do this bill. I'd do anything I could to help with that. We need to look at this in depth. I still think we need to look at doing something this year, whether it be the school thing or what. But in the long term, yes, this is a key topic we need to look at.
Thank you. Mr. Peterson and Mr. Busselman, you wouldn't mind stepping forward and entering the discussion. Welcome, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and I really, really appreciate the discussion today. I think it's been I think that you've heard from the farmers, and then also I'm really impressed with the committee's understanding and the questions that we're hearing from our members. Property tax relief, as you heard, is a top priority for our members, and we appreciate the effort that is in the House version of the tax bill on the ag relief for school building referendums. And we do support House File 2260 and appreciate Representative Lean putting that forward. It's also, I should note, I don't know if it's been noted today, but I believe that this study language is in the House, or is in the Senate version of the Tax Conference Committee report. And so supporting that would be something we would request as it goes forward, or if we have a second tax bill, or whatever the process is. But I do believe it's in there, and appreciate that the support for that. We've done similar studies before. We did the property tax working group that more looked at classifications and things, but we did study, and that was, I was an alternate to that and attended most of the meetings. I think that was already like 5 or 6 years ago, maybe longer. And we also had a mini session. I'm not even sure what I'd call it, but we had several meetings, and I can't remember if it was legislatively directed or not, where some of the farm groups, and Doug might recall, and we got together and looked at this issue, and with University of Minnesota, Steve Taff is a very good resource there on ag land values. At that time, we kind of came to the conclusion that not sure it would be better or worse. And so I've been thinking about why now, or why is important. But I think the land values, the raise, Representative Hertaus, I thought, laid it out there very well. They did spike values very quickly, and we just don't see the values come down as fast as they went up. And at the same time, the farmers, everything else that goes along with it, whether it's seed, fertilizer, everything, as you heard, trying to negotiate, very difficult, and not having any income this year. And so I do think it's a very timely time to do the study. Other reasons for doing, you know, property taxes are the shifting and the different things that go on. I think about Green Acres when we did that. There's not very many legislators that are left here that went through that process, and we tried to tweak that some, and that didn't work out so well. And so a study before we would have made those changes might have helped us, you know, and I think that that's important. It's a big ship to turn, and so really looking at it before we turn. It's unfortunate because, as Representative Anderson says, we kind of need relief now, but the school levy maybe this year, and look at what we could do next year. And the Green Acres has an interesting component on it because it's based on values in southwestern Minnesota, and so it had kind of a component to this. It was really interesting.
So Mr. Peterson, you just evoked nightmares in Representative Marquardt's mind, I think, in those times.
Mr. Chair, and probably Representative Erickson too. I've been at meetings with her back in the day, so it was and myself. So it's a but anyways, I do appreciate your consideration for this legislation. Thank you. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Mr. Busselman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For your record, Doug Busselman, Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau. We're here today to speak in favor of HF 2260. Our support is not based on having a position that favors a change, but more on the basis of desiring an unbiased appraisal if changes from the current system are warranted. Farm Bureau members are deeply concerned about the situation they are in with regard to unbearable agricultural property taxes. Whether the change comes about in the process of establishing value for the property is an answer or not isn't implied with our support for HF 2260. Ultimately, there are lots of factors which need to be considered, as you've heard throughout this morning. Farm Bureau's policy supports efforts to base agricultural land values on productivity in addition to recent sales and crop equivalency ratings where and when available. Based on our organization's study of property taxes, our working group has expressed frustration with the very narrow database used to calculate sales values, and our members, especially those located along the borders of neighboring states, frequently express their envy of the system that's across the line from them. A study would be useful, from our perspective, in verifying or disproving if other options would be a better approach to take. And so from that standpoint, we very strongly support the study, appreciate the conversations that have taken place here this morning, and look forward to participating in those solutions as we move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Busselman. Questions for Mr. Busselman? Okay, thank you both, and I want to thank both of these guys too. We did take a run at the house garage in an acre last session, it's not Mr. Hines that we can't technically do it, and Mr. Hines, I think his number gymnastics in that whole process as we tried to put forward different approaches that might be more politically palatable for the process in the education committee, and with the help of these gentlemen and some of the education folks as well, put forward a lot of ideas there, but we ran into what I would characterize as maybe political roadblocks rather than ones that were technical. And I think it's important for us to find the approach that works and the courage institutionally to take a look at that in the future, and even some of the things that might come out of this bill and the subsequent report if we're able to get it done. So, Representative Marquardt.
Well, first of all, Mr. Chair and members, thank you so much for this discussion. I thought this was really good, and so thank you for that. And this 1991 study that Representative Lean refers to back then said if they went to an income valuation, it would reduce, at that time, 1991, farmland by assessment by 32% and would have cut taxes on farms by 22%. This was based on that study in 91. And then, Mr. Chair, I remember back in a property tax committee meeting last year, I asked you what would be the average acreage of farmland back in 1991, and you came within like $10. It was really, really good. But just for the information, in Clay County back in 1991, they had in the study, the average per acre value was $639. If it was still that way, we would not be here today probably discussing some of these bills. But
great
point. You were almost right on. I remember I just...
That happens often, Representative.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Representative Lane, any final discussion here?
No, Mr. Chair, other than just to thank you and the committee's time and attention to this issue. You know, I know when we were down in Stewartville last year hearing from folks in Olmsted County about property taxes, ag property taxes continued to come up. So, you know, this is an issue that folks in all corners of the state are dealing with. And so, again, I just appreciate the committee's time and attention on this issue today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lean. With that, the chair does lay over House File 2260. Thank you both for the discussion today. Members, any other items? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Being we have a couple extra minutes, I brought this up the other day in the committee hearing we had talking about distress sales and how we only use arm's length transactions to set these assessment rates. Could staff explain a bit what is meant just by distress sales, and let's hope we don't go into a period of distressed farm sales in the next couple of years, but what's the determination of whether a land sale or any kind of a sale of property is termed distressed or not?
Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chair, I could take a stab at that, although there are other people in the audience who could give a better answer from the department or the Assessors Association, but you know, basically a distress sale would be a foreclosure is the classical case of a distress sale, but there's probably many others that other people could go into more detail.
Could someone come up and help us with that? Anybody?
I'm on a real estate broker.
Mr. May.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom May. I'm the retired Hennepin County Assessor, and I represent the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. The question on distress sales is always an interesting one because with the downturn in the residential market we just came through, distress sales were defined well. We had a lot of them. And it's not only just foreclosures. We look at those, and many times the bank end up with those properties. And in the beginning, the banks weren't really ready to deal with those properties, and they either dumped them or things went wrong with them, freezing in the winter in Minnesota and things like that. So a lot of these sales were distressed because, number one, the banks just wanted to get rid of them. Number two, they had some condition issues that went with the sale that just happened and the assessor wasn't aware of. There's also distressed sales any time that a property is sold that's not arm's length between a willing buyer and willing seller. And so if the seller is forced to sell the property and they have to dump it in a short period of time, it could very well be a distressed sale. But I would tell you this, that assessors look at each individual sales or each individual sale and determine whether there's are things going on in that sale that are outside of market kind of transactions. And that's what would define a distressed sale. So it could be a lot of different issues that go into it, and it's hard to come up with one quick definition, but each sale is looked at individually in that regard.
Mr. Chairman, Paul Egger with the Minnesota Realtors, and thanks for the discussion today.
Thank you, Mr. Egger.
Just to provide a little bit more context to it, you'll often hear about short sales, and I think that's the gentleman was describing, and you're going to hear a lot about this in tax committee because there's a provision in the federal tax conformity legislation that Congress passed in December and that you'll likely be considering as a legislature at some point during the session on federal conformity legislation for the state. But it's that increment in a distress situation where a seller, for whatever reason, needs to sell their property, but they can't sell it for what they actually owe the lender. And so through a process of working with the lender, the lender approves a short sale for less than what is owed, and that increment of between the sale price and what the seller owes is forgiven by the lender. Unfortunately, that's also considered income, and which is why the federal conformity bill is important. That's another form of a distressed sale that unfortunately became all too common during the economic downturn in recent years. I just want to provide that context.
Thank you, Mr. Egger. Questions, members? Thank you both so much. Appreciate it.
If I could just add one thing. When the foreclosure dilemma started, Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers did write a paper on distressed sales, and I could provide that. It's a little old right now, but and the International Association of Assessing Officers also wrote a paper in that time frame, 2008, 2009, somewhere in that time frame, and I can provide those to you if you'd like.
Thank you, Mr. May. With that, members, the meeting will be adjourned.